Welcome in upstate. It is a Wednesday edition of Straight Up with Sturge. I'm live down at Smoke on the Water. Diesel back at the ESPN Upstate Studios. We're going to run you up till 6:30 tonight, because at 6:30 we'll give way to our buddy Don Munson, the voice of the Clemson Tigers, as Clemson basketball 2-0 on the season. They will be hosting Sam Houston State tonight. So that's a 7 p.m. tip-off. We'll go into pregame action at 6:30. And then, of course, next week, Diesel, they're down in the Bahamas or somewhere like that. It would be a nice week to maybe be a ball boy for Clemson basketball. I just want to get out of this gray, rainy, chilly weather. I tell you what, there's just a sense of malaise all over the upstate, it feels like. Day number three of this, and, you know, Smoke on the Water. It's nice and kind of dark in here, if you will, in the bar area, Diesel, and kind of feels very reminiscent of walking the hallways at work today. They were putting in new lighting. It was dark. I felt like Isaac Hayes should have been played over the PA speakers, over the speakers at Intercom today. Had that kind of mood lighting effect going on. But anyway, we're going to have some fun today. At 4:37, we'll talk college football with our buddy Kevin McGuire from NBCSports.com. Top of the 6 p.m. hour, we are scheduled to talk with our buddy Ryan McGee from ESPN, not only a writer, but host Marty and McGee on the SEC Network, ESPN, and, of course, one of the more famous Travelers Rest Devil Dog alums out there. So outside of that, we will break down how we think the college football playoff poll went last night. There was no drama involved, and probably won't see that much moving forward. Also, top of the 5 p.m. hour, we're going to get out the soapbox, all right? Diesel, we've talked about it multiple times, kind of made fun. What are some of the more pointless thing in sports? You know, sideline interviews, halftime interviews, keys to the game, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, how about preseason football polls? We'll add that to the list. Let's go back and take a look at the AP Top 25 as we headed into the first week. And you know what? Chances are my 17-year-old daughter could have done as good, if not a better job, when it comes to the Top 25. We'll also take a look at the storylines for the weekend, standings, and a whole lot more. But let's start with some college basketball. Of course, we've got action with Clemson tonight, but last night Jordan Lyons scored 6 of his 8 points in overtime as Furman remained unbeaten at 3-0, but it did take an overtime effort against a winless Gardner-Webb team at Timmins Arena. Furman gets an 88-86 win, and they couldn't quite close it out in regulation. Gardner-Webb had a player, David, and I'm not even going to try to – well, I bet Diesel wants to laugh – Epinanai, all right, so he scored 7 points in the final minute and a half of regulation to tie the score at 78 and force overtime. But Coach Ritchie and the Furman Paladins, they bounce back. Clay Mounts, career-high 26 points. Matt Rafferty, preseason All-SoCon, back healthy again, 24 points, 10 rebounds for the 3-0 Furman Paladins. Also getting wins last night, Wofford College at home against Carver Christian University. And Coach Frank Martin and the South Carolina Gamecocks improved to 2-1 on the season with a 20-plus point win at home over Norfolk State last night. But some other news and notes when it comes to, it's that time of the year when your football team's good. Guess what? You're probably going to be up for postseason awards, and that is the case down in Clemson as they get prepared for that 7 p.m. kickoff against Duke on Saturday. But the semifinalists for the nation's top running back award, the Doak Walker Award, were named earlier today, and Clemson's Travis Etienne right there in the mix. There are 10 finalists for this award. Eno Benjamin from Arizona State, A.J. Dillon from Boston College, who, of course, the Tigers shut down this past weekend, Daryl Henderson from Memphis, Karan Higdon from Michigan, Benny Snell, of course, University of Kentucky, Devin Singletary from Florida Atlantic, J.J. Taylor from Arizona, Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin, Travion Williams from Texas A&M, and, of course, as we mentioned, Travis Etienne. So those are your finalists, or excuse me, those are your semifinalists. I think they'll pare it down to a top three, and, of course, they'll announce that award in December. Also on the defensive line, Clemson defensive tackle Christian Wilkins was named one of the five finalists for the Bronco Nagurski Trophy. That is a an award presented to the nation's top defensive player. He joins Kentucky linebacker Josh Allen, Michigan linebacker Devin Bush, LSU safety Grant Delpit, and Alabama nose guard Quinnen Williams. So congratulations, Christian Wilkins, one of the five finalists for the Bronco Nagurski Trophy, again presented to the nation's top defensive player. So a couple other things going on locally when it comes to football. You know what? We had a new coach announced here in the upstate of South Carolina earlier today. For people that did not know, the Erskine Flying Fleet are bringing football back. First time since 1951 that they have played college football in Due West, South Carolina here in the next couple of years. Well, they announced their new head coach today, or the guy that's going to bring football back. It is Shap Boyd. He is a defensive coordinator. He's been at that level with UVA Wise in the last 3 years, took them from one of the worst defenses in D3 football all the way up to about a top 20 defense. So Shap Boyd will be the, I don't know, Diesel, how do you call it? First-time head coach, new head coach. If you've taken off, what, push the 67 years of college football, how do you pronounce that? Welcome to our new head coach, or welcome to the head coach. But Shap Boyd announced at Erskine College, so congratulations to him. And, you know, a lot of people wonder, why is Erskine bringing back football? Well, financial reasons. Number one, studies show that college campuses that have a football team, the students are happier. Number two, at that level, that brings in another 100, 110, 15 probably paying students to go to Erskine and play football. And listen, a lot of them are, you know, D3 doesn't offer scholarships, but they're going to get financial aid, things of that nature. So not only do you provide a new atmosphere, a new reality there on campus with college football, you also up your enrollment as well, one in one fell swoop. So,
Serge, it's interesting that they are bringing they're bringing football back, because an article just came out yesterday on YahooSports.com, mm-hmm. that D3 Earlham College, after a 53-game yep. losing streak, is shutting down their college football program for the foreseeable future because of a lack of competitiveness.
Well, yeah, and they have now set a D3 record with 53 consecutive losses. Now, Diesel, I don't have a problem with that school saying, and I read the same article. They announced what back in 2015 they were going to take a 3-year look at where they thought they should progress. It's been 5 years since they won a football game. That's fine. You can make the move to get rid of your football program, but you do it at the end of the year. You don't call it quits with, what, one or two games left in this season, because they had the numbers, 17 freshmen, 16 sophomores, doubled it. I mean, it wasn't a huge roster, but shutting it down like that in the middle of the season, or not in the middle of the season, but toward the end of the season with a couple of games left, to me, that's quitting. That's quitting, and I'm not sure what you're teaching them. Yeah, it's sad, but I'm saying.
And I'm looking at photos of their campus right now. That's an absolutely beautiful campus up in Earlham, Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I'm not sure what you're teaching those kids, and they're going to assist the players in trying to transfer. Yep, trying to transfer somewhere else. But you got to play You got to play the season out. You know what I mean? Otherwise, I view it as cheating. I realize it's a get-off-my-lawn moment with me being 50 years old, but it's just the way it is.
Well, I'm curious to know how this is going to affect college football teams who are struggling, not only competitively, but who are struggling financially going forward. I mean, we've seen UAB shut down. Now, of course, when they shut down, they didn't know that they were going to bring it back, and especially didn't know that they were going to bring it back with such fervor, and didn't know that they were going to be so successful in their first 2 years of bringing it back. But now you've got another team that is shutting down their football program, a D3 school. You have the University of Idaho that's dropping from FBS and dropped back down to FCS. So it's interesting to see this trend in college football, Sturge. I wonder if we're going to see this continue.
Well, there's only a few schools that actually make money off the game of football.
Right.
You know, a lot of them, most of the universities out there have to support it, and it becomes part of the budget. So, but, you know, on the flip side, like I said, studies show kids are happier at a campus at college, which they have a football program.
Is this going to be PCU, you know, where they all meet up to go watch Ultimate Frisbee matches?
Yeah, I guess so, man. Don't get me started on the you want to.
That's an all-time great movie. I love that movie.
Oh, no. I love that movement. I'm just talking about the bastions of liberalness that college campuses all over the country have become. You know, snowflakes, millennials, whatever you want to call them. But good God.
Colorado State is turning into PCU. Jeremy Piven needs to get out there stat and fix things.
So, again, it's not politics when I say bad. I'm just talking about, you know what, there's winners and losers in life. There's nothing you can do about it. And until I know better, you are not going to kill the competitive will to win. Some people like it, but you show me somebody that likes to lose, and I'll show you a loser. But, unfortunately, like I teach my daughter, you win the day and try to win as many as possible, but don't believe for a moment that there's not wins and losses in life. You cannot kill that off. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. Like I said, 437, Kevin McGuire from NBCSports.com. What did you think about the college football playoff poll last night? We'll take a look at the numbers. Not much drama going on, but, hey, Diesel, you know what? The group of five conference is getting some love. Maybe that's what actually needs to be taken a look at as far as expanding the college football playoff. All right, welcome back in, Tuesday edition. By the way, Diesel, before we go to Delvin, then Kevin, there was a celebration on my street today as we got back in the good graces of our neighbor. The dumpster is now officially gone from our driveway. You know, talk about big ovations as that thing left the street. I think all of our neighbors were happier than we were. So it's good to get rid of that thing this morning. All right, Delvin, then Kevin, wanting to talk college football. Delvin, hope you're having a good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you guys doing this afternoon?
I want to go home and take a nap, man. That's all this weather is doing to me right now.
I hear that, man. I'm out and about right now, so I'll call you on my cell phone. I'm about to get home. Take me on that, bro. But about the college football playoff rankings, it seems like the like you said, the group five school gets a lot. Of course, you got UCF moving up to one spot. You got Cincinnati back in, and then you got Boise State in. One of the teams you've been talking about, I think I saw, was Utah State finally in the rankings.
They're finally in at number 23, Delvin, but, you know, they're 14 in the AP poll. That is a huge gap between the two. You know what I mean? The truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, you know, but I still have a hard time taking the – this is the first year that – and, of course, you know, when you look at 12 through 25, those guys don't have a chance to win the national title, but I just can't take this entire poll seriously at this point.
Especially when you got to fall off. Especially when you got to fall off Mississippi State team or ranked ahead of them.
Yeah, Mississippi State with four losses. Northwestern. Now, granted, they're the Big Ten Western Division champion, but four losses. I guess the reality is there's a lot of mediocrity in the middle of the Power Five conferences.
Yeah, that's how you have to put it. Just a lot of mediocrity in there because it don't make no sense for a four-loss team. We rank ahead of a team. I don't care if it is in a group of five. They only got one loss. You got a four-loss team ranked ahead of them. It just don't make no sense.
Yep, I'm with you on that one, Delvin. Thanks for the phone call. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I mean, now you got Mike Oreska, the conference commissioner for the American Athletic Conference, talking about, well, it doesn't matter that UCF hasn't played anybody because they've destroyed people. Well, the reason they've destroyed people, Diesel, is the teams they've played have really sucked. But as we came to the conclusion last week, all college football sucks this year. Kevin wants in. Kevin, hope you're having a great afternoon.
Yes, sir. How y'all doing this evening?
Man, like I said, I don't know what it is. It's just one of those fall afternoons. The weather's changing. It's a little bit wet. This has got flannel pajamas and nap written all over it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I'm with you, buddy. Just got a scenario for y'all, see what y'all's thinking on this. Everybody's got Clemson and Alabama pretty much 1-2 solidly in the playoff. Now, Alabama does have to play Georgia, which is going to be a tougher opponent. But assuming them two get in and Michigan takes care of Ohio State at the end of the year, because I'm putting Notre Dame on upset alert against Syracuse, which I think is a pretty good team, a sleeper team. Say Notre Dame loses and West Virginia or Oklahoma, they're pretty much set to meet up in the Big 12 is what they're in or whatever. Say West Virginia wins both of them games or Oklahoma wins both of those games, do you put them in over a Washington State?
I tell you what, I'd like to see which of those teams, Kevin, wins those games because I'm a firm believer West Virginia was number 9 in the rankings last night. I'd flip-flop Oklahoma and West Virginia. Why? Because West Virginia's loss was to a ranked Iowa State team, number 2. Oklahoma has proven multiple times this year they don't have any defense, and I think that's going to be maybe the source of contention when they play West Virginia because, you know, at some point you can't just outscore people, you know what I mean? So that would be a very fascinating scenario between West Virginia and Washington State if they win out. And I also want to say, if Bama loses in the SEC championship game or before then, they're in trouble. I disagree with the prognosticators last night, assuming Bama's in even with a loss. I don't necessarily feel that's the case.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I think some of them other teams have a scenario, but to me it seems like the playoff committee is so gung-ho on Alabama that it don't matter because there's such a big gap between Alabama and everybody else minus Clemson.
And I'd love for that to be the case, Kevin. I just don't believe it. You know what I mean? I'd love for that to be the case.
But I think Notre Dame does lose. I think Washington State at that point is in the best position because really Oklahoma and West Virginia could blow each other's chances up to go to the playoff.
That's right.
The following week, the other one can win. Well, Washington State would be sitting there at a pretty good chance to get in there, in my opinion.
I'm right there with you, Kevin. Great phone call. I agree wholeheartedly because here's the thing. I was wrong 3 or 4 weeks ago when I said I didn't have the faith in Washington State being able to win a lower scoring game. You know, defense having to step up. What Gardner Minshew, he has been fantastic, but they only gave up 7 points in a couple of ball games. So I was wrong. The Pirates not just all about the offense this year. They're playing some good defense as well. And I think you're dead on with the fact – Again, I'll make the case personally, and I know I hope my brother-in-law is not listening because he is the biggest Oklahoma fan that I know, and I don't know how his heart can take this stuff anymore, Diesel. You know, 48-45, lost to Texas on the last play of the game, having to stop a two-point conversion this past week, going to overtime with a good Army team, but still, Oklahoma, even with a good Army team, shouldn't be taken to overtime at home in Norman with the cadets from West Point. So I am a firm believer they've got it wrong, that Oklahoma and West Virginia should be flip-flop. But like I said, Washington State, sort of that X factor, just sitting there. And then, of course, you better pay attention, even though it looks like Michigan is playing better football than Ohio State. That is a rivalry game, and there's going to be a lot on the line next weekend when those two get together. The reality is we got the next couple of weeks, we got a way to go. It looks like it may be chalk, but just as soon as we figure that, something happens. Now, Diesel, Kevin was talking about Notre Dame. You like to defend these people for wearing this garbage. You remember a couple of weeks ago, it was Ohio State decked out in all black. Notre Dame has one of the more iconic looks in college football. When you normally see them, you're like, wow, that's Notre Dame. Would you care? I get it, it's for the kids, but would you care to explain to me those funky lime green fluorescent things that they were wearing at home this past Saturday night? Now, I get that they're wearing special uniforms in Yankee Stadium, where they've actually, of course, this is the new Yankee Stadium. Back in the day, they won a bunch of games in old Yankee Stadium. It's got pinstripes on it and all. But, you know, I don't like this stuff. I'll give them a break for this Saturday with the game with Syracuse. But you saw that lime green fluorescent stuff that they were wearing Saturday night at home against Florida State. How do you justify that when it's Notre Dame football?
God, you're such a fuddy-duddy, Sturge.
I get
it. Oh, my God.
Even
All right, explain to me, Sturge. Let me rephrase this. I shouldn't have to defend the jerseys. You should tell me why it's wrong.
All right.
Because it's not what – is it because it's not –
it's not what I want.
Okay.
All right. This is straight up with Sturge. But, no, it's not what I want. But even my wife came in and goes, Mark, why would Notre Dame do that? Because that is, you know, again, you see those gold helmets and all. I get the fact of why Oregon came up with 12 different uniform combinations back in the day. You know what I mean? But somebody like Notre Dame shouldn't have to do it. And that's my get off my lawn moment.
If you want to say this isn't what they've always done, Sturge, I just looked this up and found out that Notre Dame was wearing these bright green, quote-unquote, shamrock green jerseys back in the 1920s under Newt Rockne.
Okay. Well, thank you. But still, the Notre Dames, the Ohio States, the Alabama, that's what I, you know, Clemson's gotten into that point now of, you know, you dress in white on white for business on the road. If it's a big enough game, you break out the orange pants. But I don't know. Uniform, but yeah, we talked about useless things in sports when it comes to halftime interviews or the keys to the game or stuff like that. Uniform announcements on Thursday rank right up there at the top as well. Let's get JD in before I get out to break here, because I got the feeling now that I've been schooled by Diesel, I'm an idiot. JD, I hope you're having a good afternoon.
Hey, I hope you are too. I didn't hear Diesel's comments, but the reason why they did it was they did a little clip with Coach Kelly, take off of Rudy when all the players turned in their uniforms and told Coach they weren't playing if he didn't play Rudy. So the seniors on this year's team did that. They walked in, kind of a mock of that, but kind of a takeoff. Said, Coach, we want to wear green. And so that was one of the reasons they did it, and he did it out of honoring them. It was senior night.
Yeah, but Diesel was saying this also went back to Newt Rockne, that they wore that back in
Sturge,
the 20s
as
well.
I
love that, because I am a I always say tip your cap to
Sturge,
the past,
I found out some more information on the exact origins of that jersey. The first time they debuted the green jerseys was in 1927, in Notre Dame's first ever matchup against Navy, and they wore the green jerseys to help make the Notre Dame players distinct against Navy because they essentially wore the same uniform. They right. won that game against Navy, so they wore them next year against Navy in 1928 as well.
All right. See, yeah, now I learned.
They also wore them in a big upset, the Trojan Horse game in 1977 when they upset and blew out Southern Cal.
So, Sturge, get off our lawn.
Okay.
They have been used quite a bit in quite big games, or in this case, it was to honor the seniors.
Well, I'm glad, but, you know, my wife is the fashion mogul of our family, JD, and she went, wow, those things hurt. You know what I mean? So, of course, we like well, to have was, some fun. Thank you for the information. I don't mind being corrected.
Yeah, I was at the game, and I'll tell you, in person, those lights coming off those gold helmets and those green jerseys, it looked great.
Cool. Well, great. Well, thank you for the information, and good luck in the Shamrock Series this Saturday. All right, we need to get out to break because we're headed up to Philadelphia. It's our buddy Kevin McGuire with NBCSports.com. We'll talk some college football, see if he thinks they got anything wrong in the college football playoff poll. Then we'll open it up for discussion after that. Top of the 5 p.m. hour, my second get off my lawn rant. One of the useless things in sports is a preseason top 25. Let's go back and look at how bad this thing was butchered in 2018. All right, welcome back in on a dreary, rainy Wednesday afternoon here in the Upstate. We'll give way at 6:30 to Clemson Tiger basketball. But to the guest line for the first time today, it's our buddy Kevin McGuire, NBCSports.com, College Football Talk, Athlon Sports, host of the No 2 Minute Warning podcast. And, of course, you can go on Twitter and follow him at Kevin on CFB. Kevin, down the stretch they come. Did you see any problems last night with the college football poll? I don't have any problems at the top, but I think as you get toward the bottom, it loses some credibility.
Well, yeah, I think certainly with a week of college football where not a whole lot changed as far as that playoff conversation is concerned, I didn't expect to see much different with the new rankings last night. And I think I sort of agree with a lot of the teams that they have ranked where they are, at least in the top half. And, yeah, once you go down the rankings, maybe you can nitpick a little bit. But ultimately, I don't know how much more that really matters outside of maybe the group of five conversation. So, again, we're talking about the top 10 teams probably making a push for the final four playoff spots right now. And beyond that, it's just kind of, feeling good about where you're ranked there or not ranked.
So let me ask you, I made the case in the previous segment. The only thing I maybe had, first of all, LSU at 7, I don't even want to get in. We had that conversation last week. But personally, with my eyes, and you and I have been in press boxes, and from time to time, we forget the numbers. I'll view it with my eyes. I think I'd flip Oklahoma and West Virginia because Oklahoma three times has survived this year defensively. Overtime against Army, then lost the game to Texas on the final play in which they gave up 48 points, and then again, giving up more than 40 points in that win this past weekend against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Oklahoma has some questions about what they're doing defensively, and it didn't hurt them last year, but that doesn't mean that it shouldn't hurt them this year. I mean, I think when you're looking at the teams that we're talking about that could very well potentially be playing in the playoffs, Alabama, Notre Dame, Michigan, Clemson on the top four right now, they all play really good defense, right? So I think there is something to be said about how well they can play offensively. You can have some questions about the defense, and ultimately it comes down to just having to win a couple more games. I think for Oklahoma to just make that case at the end of the year, beating West Virginia would help. I think solidify them as one of the favorites, certainly in the Big 12. Obviously, they could have to play West Virginia twice. I don't know how that would all work
out.
But Oklahoma offensively, I have no questions. Defensively, yeah, I've got some concerns.
So let me ask you, which is the bigger X factor of these two teams, Washington State or UCF? Because today is like, you know, eat my words day, if you will, Kevin. By this, I mean, or a month ago I said, anybody convinced Washington State can win a low-scoring game if it comes up? And guess what? That's exactly what they've been able to do. But, you know, everybody kind of thinks of them as Mike Leach, the Pirate, the funky offense, all that. Are they going to be the benefit of Oklahoma and West Virginia potentially matching up, as you said, twice in 2 weeks?
They could. I think Ohio State's another team that would potentially benefit, assuming that they can beat Michigan. But I think just where they are ranked right now, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, Washington State still has to win out the rest of the games, and that includes beating Washington, which I'm not so sure should be assumed. I think that's going to be a real challenge for them next week. But let's say they do beat Washington and they do win the Pac-12 championship. Where do they stand at the end of the year? Well, there's still a lot of teams that I think they probably are going to need to have be knocked down out of the way. And the good news for Washington State is we know that some teams that are in this top 10 are going to lose, because Alabama and Georgia, one of them's going to lose. You know, if you're Washington State, you're hoping it's Georgia that loses, probably. You know, we just said Oklahoma and West Virginia are going to play each other. They could play each other twice, so that'll help. And Ohio State and Michigan, one of them has to lose at least once. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are some things that could play in their favor. And I think, you know, Washington State, like you were alluding to, we do assume that this is just an offensive machine that just goes with that air raid offense. But, you know, one thing they have been doing better this year is playing some defense. And they did that last year, Just kind of got overlooked. Yep. But now it's starting to take a little bit more note, I think, with the way things are shaping up in the Pac-12.
That's it. I mean, because, again, I was like, oh, they can't win a 17-7. Yeah, they can, because they've proven it this year. So, again, we're going to be finishing up.
Let me say this.
Go ahead.
They can win a low-scoring game against a Pac-12 team. Can they do that against some of the teams that are also in this playoff conversation? I don't know.
Yeah, that's very true. Again, we're talking with Kevin McGuire. Follow him on Twitter at KevinOnCFB. So, you know, coaching carousel, kind of quiet right now. I'm sorry, Kansas doesn't move the needle and all that. Is the potential one that could get it started Southern Cal? Because I would think that they are frustrated right now. Lynn Swann, you know, he comes from the great programs for the Trojans, and they don't fancy themselves, even with a freshman quarterback, a 5-5 team, and potentially worse.
Yeah, and don't look now, but I just finished writing up a little quick blurb about how Chip Kelly may be getting USC at the perfect time for him, because USC has been reeling, and the pressure, I think, is really starting to rise for Clay Helton, and I think it's really important for him to at least get a win against UCLA this weekend. If not, you know, Notre Dame's coming to town, and all of a sudden, they could very well not be going to a bowl game. So I don't think it's an impossible scenario in which USC is going to join the coaching carousel. And if they do make that change, I do feel like USC is certainly a high enough profile of a program overall to warrant some serious attention from some potentially really good coaching candidates. And, you know, once one team, you know, joins in almost out of nowhere, that coaching carousel can spin really fast. So it would be pretty interesting to see how that all would play out.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and call my shot there. Jack Del Rio is going to be the head coach at Southern Cal next year.
That is a popular name that a lot of people throw out. I don't think that that's the way USC should probably go, though. I know
I didn't say
USC ties, the NFL mentality, maybe that's good. But, you know, I think USC would benefit from going in a different direction with something fresh and new.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm 100% in agreement with you, but, you know, they're one of those programs that think they got to keep connecting to the past. Now, you've had one of the biggest things going on Twitter. You got to give me the answer. Who wins the rewash sheets battle? Because, you know, you got to get up around Greensboro, North Carolina to get sheets down here in the South, and I love it. Why is this this battle between Rewa and Sheets? Because even when we were up in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago, Kevin, my wife and I had to make one trip into Sheets.
Okay, well, first of all, it's Wawa. Let's get that perfectly
Wawa?
Right now.
Okay.
It's Wawa.
Yeah,
Rewa's
local. Yeah, it's Wawa. Yep.
Yeah. You know, Wawa is much more of a southeastern Pennsylvania region thing, because it's from this part of the corner state. Sheets is more in the central PA area, and I guess they have it out in western PA, too. I'm not too familiar there. But I had the benefit of growing up in Wawa country. and going to college in a Sheets town. So I have an appreciation for both, but there is a serious debate. Right. Now, I think that Wawa overall has the better hoagies because it's the better bread, but Sheets has more options. If you want breakfast sandwiches or something like that, you can't go wrong going to Sheets with the custom BTO order.
Yeah, I love a sausage and cheese on a pretzel bun from Sheets. It's like, you know, that once or twice a year when you actually see it. Even if you're not hungry, you go in there and you'll order that. All right, Kevin, let's enjoy this last couple of weeks of the regular season because we may have a disappointing championship Saturday with some of those matchups that are headed our way. Tell our listeners real quick what you're looking on, what you're working on, and what's the topic on the No 2 Minute Warning podcast.
Well, a couple of things you can look forward to if you follow me on Twitter at Kevin on CFB. I've got a couple of things that will be going live later on as this evening goes on, kind of breaking down the division clinching scenarios that we'll see around college football this weekend, and then we can explore what's going to happen next weekend as well. I kind of hope that nothing happens this week because I want to see more chaos and more intrigue for next week. But you can stay tuned for that. And then, of course, I'm always going to be trying to stay on top of everything that's going on in the coaching carousel, provide some of my feedback and commentary. And real quick, am I going to see you at the Army-Navy game this year?
No, you're not. We have a family. I can tell you, my nephew's getting married. He is a service. He just graduated from Clemson. He's also serving our country. And the rehearsal dinner is going to be on the deck of the USS Yorktown down in Charleston Harbor.
Well, that is a perfectly good excuse for not going this year. So best of luck to him.
Yeah, but guess what? Guess what? It still stung a little bit because I tell people all the time, Army Navy's my favorite thing I've ever covered, and it's not even close. So, hey, Kevin, as always, we'll break it down ahead of the playoffs. Thanks for everything you do, bud.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Kevin McGuire, College Football Talk with NBC Sports. Again, best thing to do, go follow him on Twitter at Kevin on CFB. When we come back, it is open phones. Your thoughts on college football. However, did you, Diesel, go to my Twitter page and see what I retweeted out? Did you see the cheap shot in college basketball last night? We'll tell you about that as well. So, Diesel, you know, fighting in football games and in athletic contests, it's happened forever. It's an accepted part of hockey. You know what I mean? You being somebody in baseball, they drop the gloves, you know what's coming. You know, but I retweeted Darren Rovell in the video of, and you've now retweeted it on our ESPN Upstate account, of what took place last night in a D3 basketball game. It was Pittsburgh State in, I'm not even sure what the other team's name was, but this was up north. And a Pittsburgh State basketball player by the name of Kawan Platt, literally, this guy shoots a jumper from the corner and comes up to him. And how would you describe the action that takes place after that? Is it?
It's a sucker punch.
Sucker punch. It's a sucker punch.
Yeah, he gets shot over. He didn't really even get shot over, because he was a good 5 feet off the ball at least, and the player puts up the shot from the corner. Don't know if he even made it or missed it. Didn't look like he taunted him, not at least in that clip. So we don't know what happened before that in the game, but he didn't taunt him in that particular clip. Didn't look like he was running his mouth at him. And the defensive player just comes up and looks like he gives him a forearm shiv right to the chin, hard. Yeah. There's no other way to say it than being completely intentional. And he was trying to hurt him.
Yeah, and it's one of the worst things that I've seen in sport. It's just an ugly situation. Well, the player for Pittsburgh State that committed the action, Kawan Platt, now off the basketball team, has been barred from campus immediately. And while I get kicking him off the team and all, you know what? trust me, the conference that comes out, these two teams play in, came out and absolutely admonished this guy. They actually gave credit to the other team for not losing their mind and starting a fight, because that could have been the end result right then and there. You know what I mean? And they kept their composure. As much as I hate the act that this player did, I think he probably needs some people's help right now. He probably doesn't need to be kicked out of school, barred from campus, kicked off, or you know what I'm saying? I think this is a situation where a young man's going to need some help. But
well, he needs all of the above, Sturge. Yeah, right. He should not be allowed to play college basketball ever again.
No. Like I said, he is unfortunately, that's the bad side of things. Sometimes you got to punish them, but you kick them to the curb like that, and it ends up being a worse scenario. But literally, go to ESPN Upstate and check it out, and you can go to me at Sturgis Sports on Twitter. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's ugly. It's a cheap shot. And then, quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if some criminal charges may come down before all said and done. So, going to be interesting, no doubt about it. All right, when we come back here, what we're going to do is I sat down and I went through the college football playoff rankings last night, and I looked up the AP Top 25 back as we headed into the opening weekend of the season. Diesel, we have had the conversations on this show, some of the most useless things in sport. You know, sometimes the sideline report, especially the coach's interview mid-game, things like that. Well, I think we can now, even though we love it, we can't wait till it comes out because it gives us some talking points in August, you know what I mean? I think a preseason top 25 is one of the most useless things in sports, because this is horrifically bad, how bad the media and everybody else missed it heading into the 2018 season. Yeah, it's pretty easy to get it at the top, but sometimes those names, they just don't work out. Plus, it's open phones. Top of the 6 p.m. hour, Ryan McGee from ESPN is going to join us. The host of Marty and McGee on the SEC Network, ESPN, and one of their best writers as well. Also, one of the proud alumnus of Travelers Rest High School.